Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, America. It's your boy, Doc Bonnie. That was Louie. The song is Relaxium off of Diverse Unity, which came out last September. Nice little mixtape, beat tape, if you will. How are you? You look beautiful tonight. I just wanted you to know that. Tonight, Louie will be on the program, so we're just going to have a very Louie-intensive episode, playing sick-ass beats all night. He'll call in just a second. He was just saving young children and women at the hospital because he's a phenomenal person. Great human being, great musician, fan of the show, friend of the show. Awesome. Let's get some silly stuff out of the way. This week, as you may or may not know, I am a part of a little publishing company called Cleftjaw. We'll be releasing our second literary journal. I guess is what you refer to it as, magazine sorts. My boy Frankie Metro, my boy Dustin Holland, the ever beautiful Lindsay Thomas and Ellie Finzer, myself will all be reading at Brain Food, which is a beautiful little bookstore in Longmont, Colorado. Plug. Where they sell my book, Galaxy vs. Sabretooth, which is also available online at Amazon.com. You can get the Kindle version for $2, and you get the real version for $13. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We've got someone on the line.
Hello,
caller. How are you doing tonight, brother?
Mr. Duck, do you are aware of who this is?
Yeah, is this Louie?
Yes, sir.
Fuck yeah. How you doing, Louis?
I'm doing fucking all right, man. How are you?
Great, man. I was just informing America that you just got off your job and that you're saving lives today, as you do every day.
I try to, man. I try to save the lives of health and ears. And so
yeah, you should let America know what you do for a living at the time being.
I work at a hospital. I'm keeping my actual position a secret for now. I don't want people stalking me. Because I have had that issue before. I have had that issue before. But do know I do work firsthand with patients. And for all the listeners. That's just pays the bills.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know all about paying the bills. That's what you got to do sometimes.
I can actually hear you. Oh, my God. This is amazing.
Yeah, right? No, it's...
Before you sounded like Tron masturbating or something. But now I can hear you.
That was... Yeah, no, I actually broadcasted live from an undisclosed location. My friend was nice enough to let me use his place. But he is a botanist. I think it's the best way to put it. So his botany lights were getting in the way of transmissions. It was a sad thing. I wish I had known that to begin with.
Nah, it's all good. You had three of us on that day. You had me, K.I., and Shaq, so one of us should have said something, but it's all good.
Yeah, no. Dude, I will say this. K.I. fought through it magnificently. And he was just fucking... I went back and listened to that the other day, and he is just like, he didn't give a shit if I sounded like Voltron or fucking like an old woman. He was just... pump, which is awesome. But how have things been? How's the music life?
It's picking back up, actually, man. You know, school's out. I had finals. I got done with that. I was stressing about that for a few weeks, and everything turned out better than expected. And I'm picking it back up. I kind of took a break for like a week, 2 weeks. And hop back right in. I'm working on a lot of projects right now. I'm doing with my group Beach. We're working on our tapes all recorded. Just going through the mixing process of it all. And actually, KI is mixing that. And so the tape's called Above. This is the group that I'm in, and the tape is absolutely phenomenal. And they outdid themselves on that. And shout out to Beach, Better Getting Conscious Healing, of course. This Infirmo, that's another producer, homie of mine, and Marty G, Luke Valore, Lamar Kelly, the other rappers. That's family to me, and I love them to death. And we're finishing that up, and then also they're doing their own individual stuff, which I have heavy production on most of that. And me and Kay are cooking something up. I can't tell you too much on it because he'll cry and he'll call me and yell at me and curse me out and stuff and throw stuff at me. So, but know that we're working on something. But then also I'm doing this I'm doing a collaborative project with Clay West, another local artist out here who I've been working with heavily since the day I've met him, and Aeronautic Sponsors, and man, like just work, man. I just had Jason Green, another artist I work with down here, amazing, amazing, amazing talented artist. He can sing and rap. It's phenomenal. He had his tape come out on the 4th called Victorious. I produced the lead single on that and another track on there, and it's phenomenal, and you should totally look that up. And shoot, man, as far as me individual stuff, I'm just trying to piece together this tape, man. This tape is turning out really, really, really well and really ambient. But I'm back full circle for a little bit.
Hell yeah, dude. Which, I mean, you had to take a little break. I mean, dude, like, the amount of stuff that you produce, like, in the past few months is just fucking ridiculous. Let's see. Isolated Waiting, which came out in March. Like, I mean, I could go down the list here. Falling Petals, February. Vex, January. GPA, October. September, Diversity, Vibes, July. Like, I mean, like, dude, like, that...
Yeah,
that,
man,
that's,
believe it or not, though, that's maybe... There's a lot of beats that I don't release. Like,
I imagine, dude.
Yeah, there's that's probably like, if I can give you just a fraction off the top of my head, like 2/6 of what I have made. Some stuff I have reserved just for whatever. Other stuff I have reserved for artists, particular artists that save that for me. And that's just what I release is really just like I said. I told you this before. It's a vent for me. And so, but yeah, I'm working, man. I'm trying. But now that I don't have school, I don't have to worry about trying to memorize theories for stupid psychologists and shit. I can just go full circle with this music, and I'm having fun with it.
Yeah, dude, that's fucking awesome. I mean, like, that is, it always, you know, I mean, as a writer, I write every day, so I produce, you know, a couple poems a day, or like,
Read your blog in a while. I haven't read in a while. Actually, man, you have some really, really, really sick work on there.
Hey, man, I really appreciate that. I really do. Like, the pure fact that anyone has ever, like, opened a link and read it one word off of that just makes my complete life. You know what I mean? Like, sharing your art is one of those things that is just, like, it's really indescribable. It really is, like, in a lot of different ways. But, I mean, like, I understand. Like, you create, like, for instance, I just had a book come out, and there was, like, 30 poems in it, maybe, which the publishers asked me to send 100 poems, which I have like 500 to 600 unpublished poems. You know, so it's one of those things. Yeah, so it's like one of those.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like, oh, shit, yeah. There's a lot of fucking, like, a lot of, you get on that grind and you don't, it's like, it's second nature in a lot of ways, and it's like just a part of your soul, you know, you have to sit down and write or you, for instance, have to sit down and make music during the day, even depending on whatever the hell else is going on. Like, it's a therapeutic thing above all else.
It really is. It really is. Like, I walked into my house, like, not that long ago, and, like, I just started playing my keyboard. I spend more time just playing on my piano than actually making, like, formatting a beat and stuff. And so it is therapeutic, and I'm, like, it's the same thing with writing. I write sometimes. Not near as much as you do. Jesus, 500 to 600 unpublished, like, poems, that's ridiculous. but I mean, yeah, it really is therapeutic. And I mean, that's just something that, like, as humans, everybody needs that thing. Like, I also play basketball. I'm a heavy basketball player. I've been a basketball player. I hate to admit this, but I'm a basketball player before a producer. And so, like, that's something that's really therapeutic for me, is just going out shooting around and stuff. And everybody, as humans, you know, everybody needs that, you know, that getaway hobby. And if you don't have that, it's hard to function, you know, when you go through some rough times.
Oh, yeah. And a little off topic here. I am a huge basketball nut.
I would not take you like that, dude.
Yeah, no, dude, I'll get you in on the sport. Actually, last week we had a sports blog roundtable. We had a sports roundtable for the show.
What?
And I didn't even – yeah, I wouldn't – yeah, no, I – straight up, no offense, I wouldn't have taken you for first-round basketball player either. That's fucking awesome. So, yeah, no,
yeah,
dude,
man,
who do you have in the
everything.
Series? Who do you have, Spurs or Miami Heat?
Man, I've been saying Spurs since they've got in the playoffs. Like, I've seriously, like, I'm not a fan of the Spurs. Like, realistically, I'm a fan of the Hornets, or I guess the Pelicans now, hometown team.
Yeah, the Pelicans.
And then, yeah, and then Steve Nash is my favorite player. That's my all-time favorite player. So wherever he's at, I'm instantly a fan. So I was rooting for the Lakers as well this season. And so, but I'm not a Spurs fan. I mean, it's not that I don't like him. It's just I'm not a fan of him. But the way that they're playing, and they're not going to be stopped. I feel that. I honestly believe, like, with the Heat and Spurs series, I think it's probably going to go, like, 4-2 Spurs. It's not going to go 7 games.
Yeah, it's not going to go 7 games, and it all kind of depends tonight, honestly. If the Heat win, I could see the Heat winning the series. But if they don't, I mean, if you go back to San Antonio and you haven't won anything, like, that's – you're pretty much –
yeah, you're pretty much screwed.
And, like, you know what? This is – being a hardcore Dallas Mavericks fan, as I have been since I was whatever, you know, like, it pains me to say, but I'd like the Spurs to win over the Heat just because – both teams have history with the Mavericks.
Yeah, you need to, like, you know how many Mavericks fans would be very mad at you for saying that right now.
Oh, yeah, no, I know, but I hate them even more than I hate the Spurs. So it's like, you know, it's one of those. But I really like Tracy McGrady, and he, however much
he deserves
he's not playing,
it.
He deserves a ring, and I will take all my bias to the side and shut my mouth for a second so T-Mac can get a ring, because let me tell you something, brother. I had the T-Mac 2s back in, like, 2002, maybe the greatest basketball teams of all time.
I wanted them. Like I wasn't really – like, no, it was – it might have been 2002 when I was heavy, heavy, heavy into the Houston Rockets. This one they had I don't remember what year it was, but they had Bobby Sir at the point guard, Yao Ming, Trace McGrady, David Wesley. They had a really, really good team.
Dude, David Wesley, hell yeah.
He was
great
coming
Baylor.
Off the bench just hitting threes.
Oh, yeah.
But they had a really solid team that year. I remember they won seven games with the Mavericks. Thank you, John Berry. John Berry was on the team. He was a starting three. That's right.
Yeah, dude. No, that was a Bob Sir. You get Bob Sir and John Berry on a team, for me personally, that's awesome. That's fucking.
They had amazing chemistry.
White ball. Hell, they did. That whole team had amazing chemistry. So, I mean, like, oh, God, yeah. And that duel between Dirk and T-Mac that series was. That was something for the ages.
That was amazing, man. That was, like, some of the best basketball I've ever seen. And, like, a lot of people don't remember that series. Man, I'm happy you do. I'm happy I can freaking relate with somebody on this because I talk about it with other basketball friends, like other homies and stuff, or my old teammates or whatever, and they don't remember it. I'm like, how do you not remember that? Like, honestly, that was, like, one of the greatest series. And they did it 2 years in a row. And I think the Mavs got it both years, seven games.
They did, because T-Mac never made it out of the first round. This is, I think this is the first year that he's
that's
made
right.
it.
Yeah,
last.
That's right. He never did.
Yeah, which is crazy because there's nothing in my mind that really stands out being a bad point in T-Mac's game. Like that guy, great shooter, rebounder, assister. Like did you know
at times his defense was
harder?
A bit lazy, but he made up for it on the offensive end.
Well, and that was kind of the early 2000s in the NBA. It was kind of lazy defense all across the board. I mean, when Allen Iverson, Carter, T-Mac, like, those are all your best players. Like, and Shaq isn't the greatest defensive player of all time, but he's just, like, one of those immovable forces. So it's like whenever your best defensive player in the league is just a huge man that you can barely move out of the paint, like, I don't know. It just kind of set the tone for the rest of the league. And I was talking about 2001, the Sacramento Kings LA Lakers series, and just how crazy of a series that Western Conference Finals. You remember that? It was
vaguely.
It was Kobe, Shaq, Rick Fox, Devin George, Derek Fisher, all that, and then the Kings had like Doug Christie, Mike Bibby. Peja Stojakovic, Chris Webber, Lade Divac.
I do remember that. That was the last year that they had a good team.
Yeah, dude, and that's probably one of my favorite, even though I think that the Kings got screwed out of that. That was one of my favorite.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. One of my best friends, Toby, shout out to Toby. He's probably not listening, probably play Xbox or whatever. But he's from Sacramento, and he's somewhat of a Kings fan, and we'd just be talking or whatever, and he brings up that series like a lot, just playing basketball, and so
it's one of those. I mean, because there's a huge thing about the NBA being like, kind of sketchy, and like David Stern control and stuff, and pulling strings, certain teams will win. Which I think that is, like, with that whole Tim Donaghy. I'm pretty sure Tim Donaghy, if you remember that whole scandal, the guy.
Yeah,
like
the paid ref, quote-unquote paid ref.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure he was a part of that whole series. So, I mean, that is just one of those, like, that's.
They were questioning that Maverick Heat series with him.
Oh,
the finals, Maverick Heat finals.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's. You know, as a Mavericks fan, I probably shouldn't say anything, to be honest with you. I just keep talking. I could talk basketball every day, all day of my life. Whenever I was growing up, my dad got me an NBA encyclopedia, and that was, like, what I read every night.
I didn't really have something like that.
Dude, yeah, no, right? I wish I still had it. It is It's the craziest thing. You could just go up and look up stats for some player who played like 20 games in the 40s. It's just like no reason.
Did you ever play much?
You know, I did. I'm not the most athletic kid in the world, to be honest. So I didn't go too far. Yeah, exactly. I was actually in ninth grade. I was so bad that the basketball coach was like, "Listen, you can't even be on B team. You're either gonna have to be the manager or you're gonna have to go to ROTC." And I was like,
"Oh my
shit.
God!
Like, I'll be the fucking
manager."
That's
kind of cruel.
Yeah, that's what I
the manager.
Yeah, I think he was just trying to get me to not be the manager, but oh man, I had such a good time. It's actually all my good friends is how I met them, being the manager of the basketball team.
That's pretty sick. That's pretty sick. I mean, it's something. You get to meet cool people.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you get to
travel.
Always taking the positives out. Oh yeah, get to go to Azle, get to go to Dallas. Always fun times.
Shoot, man, that's fun.
Hell yeah. So I want to also, another thing that we share in common besides the love of basketball, both of our parents are ministers. And this to me is always,
yes, sir.
Like, your dad is a pastor, my dad is a minister, my mom is actually a minister too, but she's retired.
Yeah, my mom is as well.
Wow. Preacher.
Yep, she actually just spoke this past Wednesday.
Beautiful. Yeah, my dad actually just accepted he's going to be new pastor at a new church in Brownwood or something, somewhere in the middle of nowhere, Texas. So shout out to my dad for that. And what is your take on growing up with two parents as ministers?
My take on it is that, like, you know, and I'm sure you hear this all the time. And it's very, very annoying. Not annoying, but like it's to the point now it's just like, okay, we're not all that. They always say the pastor kids are the worst kids, which is that's not always entirely true. And I'm not going to speak too much on that because I don't want people to know my stupid actions and stuff. But like where I'm at right now, I'm in a pretty good spot in my life as far as like if you want to look in terms of quote unquote success, but. I mean, yeah, I was, you know, you're a rebellious kid, and you're growing up as a pastor's kid, and your father and or mother is up there, like, speaking to a mass amount of people, and not necessarily telling them how to live, but, you know, giving them proper values and stuff, and you should do this, and you should do that, and so believe this and believe that, and you, like, you know, you're a kid. And you're not always going to want to do what your parents say. You're going to want to counteract for whatever reason why. It's a psychological thing growing up. I can't really break it down because I'll start talking psychology and then I'm not going to shut the hell up. But, like, as far as my take on it is that people kind of – I don't want to use the term segregate, but that's the term that I can only think of. They segregate you into, like, oh, you're just this bad kid because your parents are a pastor. Your parents are a pastor, so you're instantly going to do what they don't want to do. Or what they don't. You're instantly, let me rephrase it. You're instantly going to do the opposite of what they want. And so, like, I have a little sister. She's 2 years younger than me, like roughly 2 years younger than me. And we weren't the worst kids on the block just because we had pastor's kids. That's something I hear all the time. Yeah, we had our fair share of troubles and, you know, sneaking out and whatnot and doing this and doing that. I never got caught, she did. But, but you know, you have your trial like that, but what parents don't go through that with their kids?
Mm.
And so,
oh, yeah.
But
I mean, I think it does. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Huh?
Oh, no, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, what I was going to say is that, like, and then another thing, like, me going to school and, like, they'd ask, people would often ask, you know, in grade school, what's your parents' occupation? And I'd be like, oh, my dad's a pastor, and my mom's pretty much the same thing, except the more business side of things. And then some people instantly see you as a saint, and they got to act a particular type of way around you. Like, his dad's a pastor. We got to make sure we don't curse around him, or we got to make sure we don't do bad things to him, or something like that, or God's music. I had people tell me that, like, when I was a kid. And, like, I didn't grow up in the best neighborhood. I mean, I grew up in the projects for a certain period of time. And I'm sitting there having dudes telling me, like, I can't say this to you around you because your dad's a pastor. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, you can. You can say it around him. I mean, he's not going to look at you any different. I'm not going to look at you any different. You're still going to be the same stupid little kid to me. And so, I mean, you get looked at in so many different manners. At least I did. I'm not quite sure on how you were brought up. But when I was a kid, it was just always like, if it was brought up in conversation, I was instantly, I don't want to say treated differently, but I was looked at differently.
Yeah, no, it's a polarizing thing. It's like people are going to, it's one of those, people are going to act a certain way about it every time. They're going to react to it. There's never a non-reaction to it. People are never like, oh, cool. Like, you know, like whenever someone's like, oh, my dad, you know, works at the steel mill. You're like, oh, that's cool, you know, instead of like, I think pastors' kids are never the bad kid. They're always just super mischievous, like really, like ready to play tricks on people. You know what I mean? Like
really dark.
You know, yeah, not do anything that's gonna like hurt anybody, but like you know, definitely. I mean, I don't know about you, but I spent so much time in empty churches, just like hanging out. You know, while both my parents are working on something, and I'm just wandering the corridors of these churches, just, you know, running into random people or just, you know, being alone in those kinds of settings. And in those kinds of settings, I don't care if your dad, you know, if your dad's like a lawyer, if your dad's like a cop or something, you're going to play a joke on him or, you know, if that's who you are, you're just going to, you're going to act a fool because it's fun.
That's pretty much how it is.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how it is.
And people always think, too, that you're going to be so much more spiritually enlightened, which, you know, I think I probably do have a better understanding of textual, you know, passages and, like, you know, things of that nature. But, you know, spiritual enlightenment, that comes from inside. You know what I mean? I think the most spiritually enlightened people I've ever met maybe have necessarily ever been to a church, you know?
Exactly. It's almost as if like it's a self-taught thing, but to me, and I 100% like I completely agree with you on that. As far as like some of the most people that I see that are like most in tune with I guess the spiritual side of things, if you want to say the spiritual side of things, like speaking in terms of theology and nature, they don't go to church, and their opinions are really pure on everything, and it's really mythical to me how they weren't taught that. And I think on everything. I overthink everything. I overthink absolutely everything. You have no clue, Doc, like for real. And so it makes me question religion a lot. Not necessarily the existence of God, but, you know, the process of it all. You know, go to church.
Oh, yeah.
And I try to go to church when I can. If I have a Sunday off or a Wednesday off, which is when my dad holds sermons and stuff at our church, I try to go. I work every day though, so I don't always get to. But it makes me question, like, is all of it worth it? It's like, is it worth the time? Is it worth the effort? I mean, and in the long run, and I guess the blunt answer, yeah, it is. But at the same time, if you take someone that's never gone to church before and just give them a few books to read, as far as like on. Like I would really like to like sit down and like just take like a blank person, give him a Bible, and then give him a book by Charles Darwin, and then go and then have him read both, and then give me his opinion on what he needs to do next. What's the next step? That would be an amazingly interesting cognitive psychological experiment, and I would love to see that. And as cool as it sounds, I want to do that someday.
Definitely. Out here in Denver, I work at a medical marijuana dispensary, and like one of my favorite things about life is nature and being in tune with nature. And like I've done a lot of hallucinogens in my life, so it's like one of those where I have like that kind of preparedness to be able to eat certain roots or plants and have them, like, you know, if they have a negative effect on my body, I can kind of like fight through that and work through that. And I really see
that as like one of
those weird like gifts that generally it's not necessarily a gift that you set out for, but it's something that kind of happens, you know? So once you are conscious of that knowledge of self, you know, it's, you know, why not use that to better the world as much as you can as well? So it's like, it's kind of those same things, you know, whenever you learn your entire life through theological process and then have that analytical view at theological process, and as you and I have seen, church is a large business. It is a
huge
business. So
that really is, and people don't view that. Like, people don't ever see, like, you get taxes back from church. Like, I didn't know that until, like, I actually watched my mom sit down and just tally all this stuff up. But, like, church is a business. And
I think in this country it's $700 billion of untaxed money goes through churches, to use a broad term. But, I mean, and that's covering, you know, all different types of faith and things of that nature.
That's
but
ridiculous. I didn't know that.
It's one of those staggering facts that you kind of like, yeah, wow, you know. And, you know, whenever you see that every week in church, and that, you know, a lot of people are giving their money just for the pure fact that so the church can run, you kind of get lost in trying to put the teachings with the logical aspect of what's happening at that time. You know what I mean? And then it's hard because you're a kid at that point too. So as you get older, you start to, like, you know, for me personally at least, I've kind of like loosened those reins and been like, oh, well, it is a necessary evil for those people to give that amount of money so the church can do those things. But,
yeah,
you know.
That's something that I always questioned when I was a kid, because, like money is always being placed on, like, one of the top priorities of anybody's life. And my thing was, like, what are they doing with this money when they get it? Like, are they just tossing it up in the wind and then, like, an angel comes and gets it? Or what's going on? Like, I honestly didn't know. And then, like, after a while, I always thought, I had no clue what it was. But then I put it in the perspective of, like, how are they paying bills? How are they paying the bills? And then I was like, oh, that's where that goes. I put two and two together, if you want to put it. But a lot of people don't see that. A lot of people, like, and adults don't see that. And that's what kind of also, like, I don't want to say taints the idea of religion, but, like, I guess, like, the purpose of, like, why preachers and pastors do what they do.
Yeah, no, it's really delicate. You know, It's a very delicate subject, and I imagine that it's like kind of like walking on eggshells for our parents. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I mean, it's a necessary evil, and that is one of those things with church. Is like, however much bad that it has done for the world, quote unquote, it is in its small portions. It is such a huge thing for communities and bringing people together. I wouldn't have so many friends that I still have in my life if it wasn't for church. And I wouldn't have so many memories and, like, understandings of how to deal with people with disabilities or, you know, people with illness or people with different things. Because, like, I don't know if you ever did this, but my dad used to take me to, like, visit people who would be in, you know, really ill, you know, at the hospital, on their dying bed. Or he'd take me to, like, the funerals that he did or the weddings that he did. And those are always, you know, super intense regardless.
Yeah. No, actually, like, my father didn't necessarily do that out of his way. But we always, like, you know, you have a church and you have a big congregation and you know a lot of people. And you get close to these people and these people become family with you. Not just friends, but they're family. And so if they are in the hospital or if they got into a car wreck or they're – daughter or wife's having a baby, you're going to be there. And, like, and my father took me and my sister with him all the time whenever a situation like that. So I did actually see all that. It wasn't by his choice in trying to, like, instill something in us, but it was just the fact that these were people that are close in our lives. And I've seen a lot of stuff, like, similar to what you said, just by going with him to those, I don't want to say events, but those situations or whatever.
Those situations, exactly. And, man, you grow so much spiritually and just mentally and, like, just emotionally, like, dealing with other people who are at that point that you can't even imagine. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't ever be able to conceive until you get into those points further on down the line, which makes those points even easier. So it's like, it is one of those things, you know, it, as much as like it's hard being a preacher's kid, it has definitely defined me. And I mean, it's not even hard. It's just, it's different. And I, you know,
it doesn't really have a level of difficulty on it at all. It is just a different way of growing up. And you are taught a different way to view things. And I mean, honestly, like if I hadn't been raised up in a Christian home and in a pastor's home, I wouldn't be the type of person I am today. I value morals very, very heavily, and how I get how I get to know people. I'm really, and I probably get this from my dad, and I really, really am really so selective on people that I get to know or people that I want in my life on a constant daily basis. It comes down to like the women I date, the women I hook up with, like the people that I work with. Like, how am I going to talk to you if I want to continually talk to you on a daily basis on a fun level, not just a business level, but on a personal level. And like, I view like how you, like your take on certain aspects. I'll ask you questions sometimes, and like people only know that I'll ask you these random questions, and I'm just testing to see like what kind of person you are, and that's going to determine whether I want you in my life or not. And honestly, like, my circles are really small right now. Like, when I was a kid in high school, I had a lot of, I don't want to say I was like the popular kid or anything, but I had a lot of friends. I had a lot of friends, and I had a lot of acquaintances and a lot of associates. And I mean, when I came down to it, when I put thought into it, I'm like, wow, these people are kind of messed up. Like, I don't see eye to eye with them. And I cut off a lot of ties with people. And now, like, my circles are really small. I hang out with different groups of people, but they're all good people. They're all good to the heart. They're all good to their mind. And so, and I've probably dodged a lot of trouble now more recently than when I was a kid by kind of having that, the value meter, if I want to use that term. And I don't know. I honestly take that from growing up in a Christian home.
You know, it's one of those things. I completely agree. I've gotten more towards like the spirituality aspect and trying to understand like the flow of energies and, you know, the universe and how it comes to me, rather than trying to put a theological basis on it, because I feel like everybody has their own aspect, and, you know, all those prophets are wonderful to read from and learn from, but everybody is a prophet in their own sense. So, but it is one of the, man, yeah. Growing up in a Christian household instills those morals and that like, I mean, you know, I personally thank God that I was as well, because it does, you know, I feel like I am a better person because of it, and I feel like I've grown through it. You know what I mean? I feel like even if I don't associate myself with the Christian church anymore, I have definitely, that is who made me, and that is why I have morals. A larger understanding of empathy and a larger understanding of meditation and manifestations and bringing things, you know, mentally through me through prayer, you know, because prayer, having that internal dialogue and inner dialogue with yourself is one of the most overlooked and undervalued things in our society. That's my personal opinion.
I remember when I got taken out of schools. I remember that day, and I was going into second grade, but then again, I did go from a Christian school to like a regular school, a public school, whatever. And like they used to pray every morning on the school intercom and whatever. And it was weird when they didn't do that. And then like it was like that until I graduated high school. And it was weird when it just felt so awkward, like when they just stopped the whole prayer and aspect of it. But then like, when I started college my freshman year, I saw these group of kids, and like they were Indian, they were from India, and they were praying, and then like I kind of had a double take to see like it wasn't the norm for me, and I thought back like wow, this used to be normal for me. It's not the fact that they were a different religion and ethnicity, it was the fact that they were praying, and it was so weird to me. But then it's like that's when I first started grade school, that was a normal thing, and it is overlooked and like in this. Society, like I said, like society shapes minds like that. That's the example I'm trying to
give. Oh, yeah. And, you know, and that's interesting, too, because you grew up in New Orleans, which New Orleans, like, my best friend, he went to Tulane. He was, like, captain of the football team, all that good shit. He, 5 years in New Orleans, and that is not a city that you fuck around in. I can't imagine living there.
No, sir.
Or growing up there especially. You know, like, that is...
No, sir. It's rough, but I love it. I love it to death.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, I've actually had, like... You said what?
Just saying, as long as you're respectful, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know
as
when
long
you're in the wrong
part
now.
And know your boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
And I always have people come up to me, like, and they ask me where I'm from or whatever, and I tell them, and they're like, oh, I want to visit New Orleans. And I'm like, if you do visit, make sure you go with someone that knows the area, because people will try to take advantage of you. They
oh, yeah.
will.
Make sure you stay on the island in the middle of the city.
For real. But, like, I forgot what I was getting at here. No, I grew up in, yeah, I grew up on the West. Well, we lived all over. We lived in Canada for a little bit, and then, when we first moved to Louisiana, I was 4, and we lived uptown, and then we moved to Canada, and then we moved to the West Bank, and we stayed in the West Bank until the hurricane hit, of course, and relocated it. But I love it to death. It's dangerous. It's very dangerous. I've actually had, like, quite a few friends die recently, like childhood friends just get killed, like, senseless violence, and, it's sad, man. It's sad, but, I mean, as weird as it sounds, like, I miss it. It's crazy. But I had a friend of mine, Tyler, rest in peace, Tyler, he got killed about a month or two ago. And I really wanted to go to his funeral. I was like, hey, I have a little bit of money saved up. I was talking to his mom or his dad at the time, and he was like, nah, stay down there. Don't come down here. Like this ain't for you. We'll be fine. We'll be all right. And I was like, all right, man, but my condolences and stuff. And actually, his mom ended up killing him herself out of just sorrow from that. And it's ridiculous. And then a month ago, another childhood friend of mine, he got shot. But, I mean, he was pushing coke heavy. He was doing it since I lived down there. And his brother, which was also a really close friend of mine, I called him, and I was like, man, let me come to this funeral. I actually ended up dead going. I was like, let me come to this funeral and just show my respect. And he was like, man, don't be down here too long. Like, he's like, this ain't for you no more. He's like, well, his words was, I'm too smart to be down there anymore. He's like, you need to try and stay alive because you're going to be a better human for this world. And it's ridiculous. It's like, this is where I grew up at, and people are telling me not to come back due to how dangerous it's at. These are friends. These are like family to me. It's a very,
yeah.
very, very rough city, and, like,
it is.
You can't go down there blindly.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, Joe...
If you're trying to explore, you can't do it blindly. People go downtown all the time.
Yeah, no, if you want to go down to Bourbon Street or Tulane's campus, yeah, go enjoy yourself. But, yeah, other than that, like, yeah, I mean, Joe, my boy who lived down there, he was... first week he was down there, he was, like, driving around and, like, came upon a dead body. You know what I mean? It's just, like, one of those things
yep.
where, like, he had never experienced anything like that. And, like, you know, no one should experience things like that. But that's New Orleans. Like,
it's sad that you graduated. That, and it's also sad that it's very true. That is New Orleans.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, he just graduated. It kind of shaped him down there, too, because he just graduated with a Homeland Security, a degree in Homeland Security, and he's also, like,
nice,
a Marine captain.
Congrats to Joe.
Yeah, no. Yeah, right? No, yeah. Shout out to Joe Kim. Good. My brother. Friend of the show. But,
yeah.
We have, we have just burned through time. I want to play some of your music. That way,
mm-hmm.
you know... That way we at least played some of your music on here besides one song, which we started off the show with Relaxium, which is one of my favorite songs.
I like that. I actually had a friend of mine go over that. I'm about to email that to you.
Badass. Yeah, no, that whole diverse community. I'll say this, too. I love artists who work with other artists who take their time on their covers. You know what I mean? If it's like,
oh yeah,
if you're releasing it for, you know, just the internet, or if it's just a beat tape, or if you're like, for me, for instance, release just having like a poem or something, like to have that visual to go along with it, it's one of those really important things.
The tape I'm working on now,
it's a continuation kind of from the last tape. And
awesome.
It's called But Still I Froze. And so the cover for that is so sick. I had Justin Mahler work on it, a really good artist. And the cover is, like, it's ridiculous. Like, oh, my God, I wish I could, like, I don't want to elaborate too much, but, the songs are going to be amazing already at that. Not tooting my own horn or anything, but this cover is ridiculous. And it has kind of a dark vibe to it. Like, so I'm still kind of going through some things. Some female stuff, but like the music's gonna be kind of dark. It's gonna be a little more trappy than how I thought it would be. But like lately, I've just been playing around with just different instruments and patterns, and it blends perfectly with how the synths and the samples are formatted. And so
that's one of my favorite things too. Is like with all your tapes that you released, you've been able to, like, see the progression. Like, how funky GPA was, like, how, like, 70s and funky that was, as opposed to Isolated Waiting, and how, like, right alongside with what other producers are doing in the country right now, just, like, that dark, ominous, but, like, still, like, going at you. Like, I mean,
still
I just
hard.
Can't wait. Yeah, no, exactly. I can't wait for you to enter your prime. To use about, you know, like use sports term, like, cause it's just like, you know, you're feeling out your rhythms right now and getting, man, it's just, I'm excited. And I want to play Absolute Zero, which you just dropped the other day, which is probably one of my favorite songs that you've ever done.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. That actually came about pretty quickly, but, that's going on the tape. I actually have, the artist in my group, Luke Valor, he's writing a song to it. Look out for that. But the instrumental, the instrumental is it's a little bit dark, but Sergio Weekend sample. And so, but.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like, if I can say, like, that instrumental, that song is probably, I don't want to say that's how the tape's going to sound, because it's not, but that's one of the lead away tracks as far as, like, it's going to take it to a whole different turn. From the rest of the album, if I can use, and so, but I'm glad you like it, man.
Oh yeah, fuck, dude. I mean, like, honestly, you know, it's funny because like how we met on Facebook through the Nonstop Hip Hop. It's one of those random things, like, which for America, that's just a random hip hop vlog that we're a part of. Just one of those random things where you don't ever really expect to like run into like musicians that you really respect and like in those kinds of like settings.
It's funny. Like I can every musician that, and honestly, like all the artists that I work with locally down here are like family to me. Beach is like family to me. K.I. is like family to me. Clay West is like family to me. Shag is like a brother to me. And like, I met them all in the most weirdest way. Like the way I met Shag was, our sponsors, Aeronautics and Clothing Company, shout out to them, Tyron and Clay, Jason Green, Matt Clay. But our this was before, like, this was in their early development, and it was me, Beach, the group I'm in, and who else was it? It was these two girls that were kind of like coaching us on how to do interviews and stuff, and because we shot a video. But I saw Shag, and I'm like, okay, this is just this random white guy. He was there. He was really quiet. He didn't say anything. Just random white guy. So I assumed he was the photographer. And I'm like, I wasn't for sure though. I was like, maybe he's a friend of Clay's or Tyron's or something, or maybe Lamar knows him. I didn't know. And then like it turns out that he was a producer, and they had all got together like to do the song. And this is when Clay was in a group called Wealth Club with another artist friend of mine named Kickstar. And shout out to him if he's listening. But him and two artists from Beach, Luke Vallon and Lamar, they all got on this track called Manana. And I don't know if you've ever heard that song, but that instrumental is ridiculous. It's called, you can hear it on, what D-tape is it? Oh my God, I can't remember. Oh my God, the instrumental is called Confusion.
And, oh, my God. It's the one with his face. It's the one with Shaq's face, and he has, like, eye speakers for eyes or something.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the name of that one either. Hold on. I can look that up real quick.
Yeah, but that's the first instrument I heard from him, and I was like, Jesus Christ, this dude's ridiculous. And it's like a Latin sample, a Nicoletta sample. That's the artist's name. And the bass line and the drums, and, like, I was blown away. And I was like, man, this dude taught me on one instrumental. And I was like maybe like 300 beats in. I was still early in my career. But I met him thinking he was a photographer. And so it is weird how like these situations and occurrences and vlogs, and you meet people in very funny ways. And like some of my close, actually all of my closest friends I met in the most nonchalant and weird way. It's not a, hey, my name's Louie, my name's Naaman, nice to meet you. What's your name? I've never really made friends like that.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, and, you know, why would you? You know, I don't think I ever made friends like that either. It's always those random, like, fucking, by the way, that the name of, it's called Identity Crisis, that Shaq.
Identity hit. Crisis, thank you.
Yeah.
Shout out to Shaq.
Yes, but, yeah, shout out to Shaq. Yeah, no, he... Yeah, that
the tape he's working
really
on too.
Me.
Not to get off topic, but the tape he's working on, because we email beats. Well, like I haven't been emailing him stuff because I'm still kind of trying to get through everything. But he'll email me beats that he's working on, and the tape he's working on right now, is pretty bananas. It's outrageous, and
dude,
you'll be hyped
kid,
for that one, Doc. Like for real.
I mean, yeah, you remind me a lot of like. You just remind me of what's going on in the game right now with, like, influence of, like, Flying Lotus, Matt, you know, all the great producers. But he reminds me of,
Flylo.
Like, Mad Lib, hard, like...
Yeah, like, I don't want to place a comparison on it, but that would be the closest thing. Like, it's like a...
Yeah,
I always said that he's Mad Lib and J Dilla put into a white guy's body.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, he's sample master, dude, like... I don't know. Those samples are like butter. It's like fucking butter melting on toast. Everything.
Yeah,
fucking,
and like we use the same program. We're both going through FL, like Secret Reveal, blah, blah, blah. But like I look at the way he makes beats and the way I make beats, and it's, I don't want to say it's completely different because now I kind of do it in the same stylization that he does because it's a lot easier, which I'm not going to break down into because, once again, that's another thing. FL Studio, I can talk about that for hours. But yeah, it's weird. We like, it's the way he chops his samples is so intricate and so ridiculous because I've seen it, and it's crazy. He's a mad genius, mad scientist.
The whole little team that y'all have developing out in Fort Worth is just, it's a whole group of little mad geniuses. Like, KI has some of the best chopped and screwed, like, he's got a real knack for that, a real ear for that. I mean, he's super talented across the board everywhere else, but that whenever I first heard that Welcome to the Funk Volume 1 or whatever, like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah,
I like that. It shot me back to just driving around listening to fucking, like, DJ Screw in Austin whenever I just, like...
Yeah, man,
life.
That's how it is. Like, he's kind of broken away from, not broken away from it, but he hasn't been chopping stuff, chopping and screwing stuff as much, because he's working on his album, Knowledge is Power, which is going to be crazy. I think I have like 4 tracks on there, but man, that album's going to be amazing. But yeah, his chopping and screwing, like, abilities is, it's really, really underrated. And I don't know anyone that does it better. I mean, I don't know a lot of people that do chop and screw. I only know a few DJs.
Yeah,
but,
and, oh, man, like, if you get on, like, WorldStar or DatPiff and, like, look at, like, the chopped and screwed bullshit on there, you're just, like, it's not even chopped and screwed. It's, like, simple, like, hey, I don't even know. I'm not a producer, so I don't even know what the hell they're doing, but I'll tell you what, give me a week and I'll probably be able to do the same thing because
the way he does it is very intricate. He adds a lot of effects and mixing and he's not even using separation of vocals and beat. He's using just the whole song, which is like another talent that to make it sound so beautiful.
Yeah, that's crazy. I've never just using a solid track and whoa, that's fucking dope.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm gonna play your song real quick just so we don't geek out for too long. and actually
give okay, yeah, we can do that. I can do that.
Music
so
content.
But yeah, go ahead, man.
For sure. All right. This is Absolute Zero by Louis. This is off of his new Untitled mixtape.
Sometime this month, though.
Awesome. Yeah, I never put a date on anything. I put a date on my book to come out, and it was, like, the most stressful day I've ever had, and it was 420, which should be, like, the complete opposite of that. Because I was working Cannabis Cup for my job, and, like, it's just one of those. Yeah, don't put dates on things.
It's actually smarter, too, like, when you're in big name. Like, I was watching I've always been a huge Schoolboy Q fan, and I'm so excited. I don't know if you know that. You know Schoolboy Q? I'm assuming you do.
Oh, dude. I used to live out in L.A. a couple years ago. I am the biggest TDE fan, dude.
Absol is a monster.
I want to read some of his writings. You know, I know that motherfucker writes.
I don't want to. I think they'd fuck up my head.
Yeah, no. That's kind of why I don't want to, dude. That dude is fucking... He is heady, and I do not use that term for too many people, but yeah, he is insane, dude. I wish you would work with MERS more.
He did some work with Murs on his first mixtape.
God.
Long-term
mentality.
Yeah, long-term mentality. Yes, exactly. Yeah, which is a great, great fucking tape. By the way, I have a question. If you could work with any of the current artists, you know, that are out there right now, because, I mean, Schoolboy, I mean, Black Hippie is still pretty much underground, you know, and ASAP.
Yeah, kind of.
They're both kind of like in that tween stage, ASAP and Black Hippie, of like coming to the forefront of like,
yeah,
you know, MTV and shit. But, you know, there's some other really awesome collectives out there. There's a lot of good hip hop out there today, to be honest with you. Who would you like to work with if you could?
You mean big? Well, just any artist out there?
Yeah, just any artist, really.
Man, I think I have to name one. that's the name one.
No, you can name a couple if you want.
Okay, I'm gonna do three. Three artists that I really want to work with. One, do they have to? Another question: do they have to be rappers?
No, not at all.
I want to do a track for Bjork. I would love to produce a track for Bjork. I would absolutely love that. Her voice is so angelic. Two, Danny Brown. I want to do a track for Danny Brown so bad.
Dude, I saw him live. Danny Brown. In October, that is the, if you ever get a chance, that's one of the best shows I've ever seen, any genre. And that dude brought it every fucking song. He is just live. Dude, that guy, I don't know how he's not just fucking huge. He's such a rock star. He's fucking
Danny
awesome.
Brown is ridiculous.
He is,
Danny
man.
Brown.
His wordplay is stupid.
It is. And, like, I like how he kind of has, like, and, like, a lot of people look down on him for this, but he kind of switches modes. Like, you know, he has that real playful, like he can go from a track like With It and then a track like Scrap or Die. And
yeah,
it's weird.
Right.
Like, he has a party track voice, and then he has, like, a serious voice. And I love that. It's crazy. Like, I remember I was listening to Triple X, and I was like, is this a collab tape? Who's this other guy rapping? This doesn't sound like Danny Brown. Because the first Danny Brown verse I heard was on Terrorist Threats, which was an Absolute Control System. And I was like, damn, that dude's sick. And then I looked him up, and I listened to Triple X, and, like, the first few tracks, he had that really high-pitched voice, and Jack, before every song. And then and then the second part of the tape, it got really serious. And I said, wow, this dude really hits all dimensions.
Oh, dude,
and so,
Oh, man, after Monopoly or whatever, after song 9, that whole, it goes from, like, party album to fucking, like, one of the most depressing things that you've ever listened to. Like, that Party All the Time song, like, all I'm going to say these two things. Absol, Book of Soul, on the very last song besides the Black
Man. Oh, man, that song is sad.
That song, dude, I showed it to my roommate she runs like a little indie record label out here. Like, she's like indie rocker. Me and her were almost in tears, dude. Like, that song is so fucking emotional, like, so powerful.
Yeah,
like,
talking about a Lori Joe.
Yeah, dude, like, that is like one of those songs that is just like, oh, and then
the beat was perfect for it, too.
Oh, yeah, dude. And then that and that's another thing. TDE has one of the best production teams.
Digiphonics. I actually did a showcase for them a while back. I got to meet Soundwave and Dave Free. Oh,
awesome.
Man, that was so humbling.
Yeah, I bet, dude. Yeah, no, they're fucking... I saw them in October, and, like, it was their first tour, and they were pretty much, like, halfway through the tour, so they were all exhausted by the time they hit the stage. But, dude, you know who came with them, though? One of the most underrated rappers out today, Stally. Off of,
Stally!
You know,
actually, like I said, one of the artists I worked with, Clay, Clay West, he actually opened up for Stally a while back.
Oh, dude, no shit? Stally is badass, dude.
He's very underrated.
That blows my mind.
That's what throws me off. Like, when I remember reading, like, Solly signed MMG, and this was when like, I first started listening to him. I'm not a huge Solly fan, but I respect him, and he's a very, very, yeah. very good rapper. But when I saw that, I was like, wow, like that's completely left field for Maybach. That's
yeah,
not the type
no.
of artist I thought he'd.
There's a few lines in some of his songs where it sounds like he's, like, referencing, like, Meek Mill and Wale and Rick Ross and Gunplay.
People question
you know,
that.
Yeah, dude, that boggles my mind, honestly. Like, that is just, what? But, yeah, no, I mean, he is definitely an acquired taste. He's a little wordy for a lot of people.
Sometimes,
you
yeah.
know. Yeah, but,
it is
yeah,
an acquired
no,
taste, but he's
yeah,
heavy.
He's heavy. He's thought provoking, and he's got awesome production as well. Some of that shit on, I don't know if you've ever taken the time to listen to Lincoln Way Nights, his mixtape from like a couple years ago.
No, I haven't Dude, listened to it actually.
That is some riding music. Like that is like some put it in the car on Friday night,
coast.
Sunset, and just coast, dude. Like, oh, dude, every song is just fucking like. Yeah, dude, it's probably one of my favorite mixtapes. And okay, and who's the third artist that you would work with?
Gambino.
Charles
Gambino.
Yeah, dude. Donald Glover is the shit. Yes.
Donald Glover, like I knew him as an actor before a rapper, and
yeah,
sure. Like I used to watch their YouTube channel, their comedy. I don't remember what it's called, but flipping the lyric, he's a funny comedian and actor, and like I was a fan of him before he was a rapper. And then when I remember listening to Childish Gambino, and a friend of mine showed me the song Freaks and Geeks, which is like one of the most lyrically insane songs ever put out, in my opinion. Wordplay out the butt. Wordplay is just, oh my god, like people still firmly believe people can't fully like dissect the metaphors and similes he used in that song. Some of them were a little random and thrown in there, but it was put together really well. But I would love to produce for Gambino, even though I know he produces for himself a lot, primarily,
yeah.
Aside from royalty. But I would like to work with him. Also, I just like to have a conversation with him, like, for real. Like, I want to talk to him and be like, hey, Mr. Glover, tell me something funny, and then I'll try and be funny back, and then we can make a beat. And then go from there. Like that would be cool. Like Childish Gambino, Mr. Donald Glover, like that would be awesome.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But those are my three. Yeah. Those are my top three artists I like to work with, and
that's really cool. That's kind of unexpected, honestly.
Yeah,
but,
a lot of people say that.
Yeah,
and then,
like, no, I like it.
My style isn't really for them either, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Although
yeah,
Gambino
no,
has been getting a bit trappy.
Yeah.
He's been getting a bit trappy in his music. Like the last, did you ever listen to Royalty?
Yes.
Royalty, that last track, he had like Alley Boy and Tina Fey and someone else was on it. And he did
yeah,
that beat
no,
and I was
dude,
like,
that
whoa.
Dude,
like
that, dude,
was,
that
was,
wow.
was a pretty insane beat. Or the one with Absol and Schoolboy Q, Unnecessary, he did that instrumental. It had like kind of like a surfer's guitar and heavy 808s and stuff and some crazy snares. Like he's getting a bit more hard in his beats and his lyrics. Like he started kind of trying to get a little gangster on niggas now, which is crazy. But he can do whatever he wants. He's Donald Glover.
Exactly. Yo,
but
I've been listening to a lot. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's my three artists. I mean, I can name a bunch of artists that I want to work with. Like, then that, in time, I pray I can, but I can.
Yeah.
I will go for hours listening to artists and why I want to work with them.
Yeah, and I mean, like we were saying earlier, there's so many good artists out there right now. Like, for instance, I've been super on the Raider Clan, like Space Ghost Perp, Eat the Wolf.
You have?
You know,
I'm not a fan of
yeah,
them, dude, honestly. I like their production, though, but as far as their rapping.
Acquired taste.
Yeah,
no,
I think
it's
like
taste.
That same category with Stolly, something that you got to have a taste for.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. The production is really what brought me in because it has that lo-fi, like, fucking just, like, grimy ass sound to it.
Really
like,
grimy and really dark.
What got me into rap back in like 98 or something, I got a hold of my brother's Enter the 36 Chambers CD.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's
and that is pretty
that's
much
to be brought into it. That's
right.
That's
yeah,
like, see, all of y'all guys have like cool ways, like K.O. was telling me the way he got into rap was like he remembered listening to Biggie and Luke Valor, my other homie, he was talking about he was listening to A Tribe Called Quest. The first rap song I ever heard was Country Grammar by Nelly. That's the first rap song. And I
great
still
song,
love it. It is, but like, it's not the best song. Like, all y'all have cool ways, and then like, I was heavy on that for the longest, and then I didn't really get into hip hop until like I worked at my first job. I was 18. My first job was at Fairline, the shoe store, and one of the managers named Jonathan. Shout out to Jonathan. I doubt he's listening, but he's cool as hell. He used to be naming off all these artists and all these songs, and like he'd be like, yeah, I looked this up and looked that up, and I used to just listen to whatever was on the radio, and then prior to that, I had like a little weird obsession with Atlanta gangster rap, but I'm not going to go into that. But whatever was on the radio, that's what I was into. But he'd come in here and be like, yeah, you heard this new song by the Cool Kids, or this new song by Big Sean, or Kanye had this song come out, or Wayne had this mixtape come out. And that's what really kind of got me intrigued, was like just looking up, like I'd be at daily, almost hourly looking up new songs on different websites. And that's what really kind of catapulted me into hip hop.
Oh, and there's so, I mean, like, right now, I think my favorite underground, like, artists to listen to, like, Raider Clan, The Large Bulk, but Underachievers, Flatbush Zombies,
Underachievers.
What's going on out in Brooklyn right now? What's going on out in New York in general?
The Beast Coast, man, Beast Coast.
Dude,
that's what they're
Action
calling
Bronson,
it, dude.
Action Bronson, Pro Era.
Pro Era, Action Bronson, Underachievers, Flatbush Zombies. Like the
Dime
A$AP Mob, they're really coming up.
World's Fair, dude. Have you listened to World's Fair at all?
I heard a song by him.
Dude, you
it's one song.
You've got
you need to send me some of
this
stuff
Banks
on Facebook.
Yo, I definitely will. Remy Banks and Hannibal King a couple years ago released this mixtape, which is what got me turned on to him. And Hannibal King, one of those, like, really underrated producers in the game right now. Super jazzy style, which is why, you know, it's like a really classic hip-hop jazzy kind of stuff. But, like,
that's what's coming back now, and they're blending it together with really heavy drums. And it's come, like, Indigoism, that had some tracks on there that was, like, Indigoism is ridiculous.
Hey, it's so sick, dude. Did you ever get to check, like, any of their, like, because right after that, I'm pretty sure. And then AKA released some, like, extra music, just kind of, like, solo stuff that they did with Brainfeeder. And, dude, that shit is just fucking
Brainfeeder.
I mean, they're just blessed with that beautiful production. You know what I mean? Like, you've got, like, production.
That's what it comes to nowadays. Like, it's gotten to the point to where I don't want to say back in the day, but, like, earlier, I guess if I could say the 90s, when production kind of had a simplistic sound, but that's when it was really into lyrics and stuff. And then it broke down into, like, your lyrics determine if you got radio play. Now it's whatever beat you get on determines the radio play. Like, no offense, and I'm a huge fan of Mike Will Made It, but he has, like 11 or 12 tracks on the radio. And it's just like, It's not more or less like the artist. It's like if an artist can get hold of Mike Will or T-Minus or Hit-Boy or Lex Luger, they're instantly on the radio just because the beat knocks. And that's just how it is. Like, nowadays, what determines whether you make it or not is your production. And you can have the hottest 16. You can spit bars like Biggie and Nas had a kid, and you can spit bars like that. But if you don't have good beats, you're not going nowhere. And, I mean, and as a producer, I mean, I may be kind of messing up saying this, but it's kind of sad. But now it's kind of blending together. It's the fact, like, now you kind of do have to have the lyrics to get the proper respect. Not necessarily a radio play, but to get your respect proper.
Yeah.
And that's
which,
why, like, artists like Kendrick Lamar and Ab Soul and Joey Bass, they're all coming up now. Them dudes are ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think, to me, one of the more depressing things, Capital Steez was probably one of my favorite rappers. Dude, yeah,
that hit me hard.
It hit me hard, man. I was not expecting, you know, I don't think anybody expects that kind of thing, but.
I didn't either. That week before he passed or took his own life, that's when I was really got heavy into him. It was like that. I'd always hear his name and hear his raps, but I never really tuned in and paid attention. But that week before, I was like, man, this dude's sick. And he was talking about he was working on his solo project at the time, and he had Kix, and him and Kix were working on collabo tape. And then that tweet he had too, that last tweet. Do you remember what it said? The end.
The end. Damn. Yeah, man, that shit was trippy.
That was dark.
That was dark. Yeah, no. And I mean, that really. Yeah, no, I haven't been affected by, like, someone who I've never met before dying in a long time. Like, Tupac was, like, one of those, like, real big things that I remember being affected by. But other than that, you know, like, if it wasn't a family member, you know, it's
you didn't really put much thought into
loss. Yeah, exactly. I mourn for the loss of a human life, but I don't mourn, you know, because I really respected the artwork. But, man, Capital Steez, dude, that American Corruption tape. I mean, one,
Banana.
I'm a huge, huge Grateful Dead fan, and on Cab Fare is that this opening riff is just like this old Jerry riff from some show.
What
that
song
I've
was
seen.
That from?
Dude, I can't remember what song it was from at the moment. Right,
you can go on Who
Sampled
and find that. I'm actually going to look that up here in a bit. You can go on Who Sampled and find that.
Yeah, dude, but that hit my heart. You know what I mean? Like, I used to, like, actually follow around Further, which is, like, the remaining members of the Grateful Dead, and, like, Dark Star Orchestra, which is, like, the only, they play, like, old Dead set lists, which, like, the Grateful Dead is a very interesting thing. It's kind of like the Wu-Tang Clan, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just a huge syndicate of people, and it's really,
they're following
it's just
really big
crazy.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know, for like those two, like one for like every, the Flatbush Zombies and each of their music videos have like Grateful Dead like tapestries in it, and they have like Grateful Dead references. So, and the Glorious Dead, like, yeah, exactly. So the Underachievers. So like for me, like that was like one of those things that was like, holy fucking shit, like, my whole life up to this point makes complete sense. Like, because like for years, you know, I grew up as like a hippie kind of kid listening to, you know, 60s music, and then got super into metal for a little while. But then I came full circle with underground hip hop. So it was like,
I had
really
that saying, and I'm going to tell you something that a lot of people don't know about me, and I can totally relate with you on that. It's like, I grew up, well, like, I didn't grow up in the best environments, excuse me, but I was really, like, I always listened to gospel music, like, that was always just playing in my house. But aside from that, I was really into punk rock from, like, ages, like, maybe, like, from when I was about 7 to, like, 11. I was really into punk rock. I was really into this band called Prozac, and they had one TV channel that played, like, a bunch of punk rock, and I was really into that, and I was really into, like, Papa Roach, and, like, a lot of this, like, Limp Bizkit, a lot of this weird stuff. And then it got to the point, like I said, the first rap song I heard was Country Grammar, and then I kind of went into that. Like, whatever was on BET or MTV, whatever rap song that was on there, I was listening to that. And then,
yeah, whenever,
like, what were you saying?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say, whenever Fred Durst and Method Man started making music together, that kind of changed my life a little bit. I think that probably...
That was... I actually just heard their work, like, last year sometime. I didn't even know that they worked together.
Oh, dude, you kidding me? Oh, man. Yeah, that was 7th, 8th grade.
I was really late on that.
Oh, that was my shit. Sorry, go ahead.
That was really late. No, you're fine. But then, like, from, like, then, like, to, like, 11, so I was, like, 14 or 15 or whatever, whatever was on the radio, which in New Orleans, they had a lot of, this it's a kind of a New Orleanian genre called bounce music, which everything, like the song Ball by T. Allen Wayne, that's bounce music. And everything kind of sounded like that. And you had artists like Gotti Boy Chris and DJ Pikachu and all that. It's whatever was playing. And then also Wayne, because, you know, Wayne's from New Orleans, and I was a big Wayne fan. Like, I was a huge Wayne fan at one point. Not so much now, because his content's kind of taken a hit. But whatever was on the radio in New Orleans, I was into that. And then I came down here, and I hate that I had to get into this, but I was really, 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 really into Atlanta underground gangster rap. They had a few artists, like, I can't remember the groups. There was one group called Ammunition, and I loved, they were just talking some gangster stuff. And it was bananas to me. And also BHI, just like Atlanta hip-hop, and I was really into that. Like, they had, like, different, like, MySpace pages and stuff, and I used to just go in there and just download a bunch of this different stuff, and I, like, Looch Million, like, these artists are, like, probably all just working at McDonald's or something now, but I was heavily influenced by them.
Dude, yeah, it's funny
weird,
how
like,
works, though.
It's ridiculous how that works, and they were just, like, kids just doing music out of their closet or whatever, I'm assuming, and putting it on MySpace, and I would download that, and then, like, around the time coming up, I was a huge Wayne fan. Whatever he dropped, I had. Mixtape-wise, single-song-wise, Young Money, I was a big Young Money fan. And I hate to admit that because they're shit now. Excuse my language. But their music is terrible. But I was a huge Young Money, Cash Money fan. And
dude,
I will admit that.
Whenever Currency was on Young Money, Cash Money, that was my shit,
my
dude. Currency.
God. Currency was... Oh,
dude.
That's when that was their... In my opinion, that was their golden age as far as content-wise.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, it was only Mac, Main, Lil Wayne, and Currency at that point, but...
And Boo. They had another artist named Boo, but he didn't really...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, no, dude. Fucking Currency. Currency, to me, is like... I fucking...
He's still one of the sickest. Him leaving Young Money was the best thing he did.
Oh, yeah, dude. Fucking, well, I mean, that string of mixtapes that he released right after that,
yeah.
Like Independence Day, fucking Fast Times at Ridgemont
High, Jet Files.
Fucking, yeah, Fear and Loathing in New Orleans, like,
mm-hmm.
Dude, covert
album.
Stuff. By the way, anything that The Alchemist, I know you and I share this, The Alchemist is definitely one of your favorite producers, right?
Yes, and he's definitely, like, the most underrated, too.
Oh, dude,
man.
You ever hear that mixtape that he did with Damo Genesis last summer?
Yes.
That shit was, like, how... Well, so slept on. So slept on.
Him, and the same thing could go... He had a couple tracks on How Do You Beach's EP that came out, like, about a year ago, and it got heavily slept on. That Alchemist works quietly, but when he does work, it's ridiculous. The latest thing I've heard from him was, I know he's doing work on Oxymoron, which is Schoolboy Q, but it was a track he had with, he didn't rap, but it was Schoolboy Q and Danny Brown. They were on the song.
I know what song you're talking about.
It was a really wacky instrumental, in my opinion, but it was such a good song. I don't know, I could be wrong, I might not be looking up enough of his work, but Alchemist just needs to work more.
Yeah, well, he released one with Action Bronson not too long ago.
Yeah, that was a couple months ago. That's right.
Yeah, the Rare Chandeliers. That's a... I like that mixtape a lot. That's a fucking funny concept, just all the way
it's
across.
Amazing. Let me ask you this, not to get off topic, but this is an artist I've always listened to from day one. And he's just getting his name out there as Chance the Rapper. Have you listened to Acid Rap yet?
Yes, I have. Dude, what? That shit's on such a different level. I'll show it to people and they'll just be like, what was that? And I'm like, I don't know, but I fucking love it. Like, it's
man,
it's
I heard Chance the Rapper on Gambino's Royalty. And he had a verse on there. And the track was in like a French, I Think They Like Me franchise boy sample on it that I think Skywalker did. And I was like, man, this dude has like a really wacky rapping style. And then I looked him up and he had this first mixtape called 10 Day. And when I looked it up, it had maybe a couple thousand downloads. I think I want to say like 3,000 downloads or something like that. And like the, I don't know if you ever have you ever listened to 10 Day, but it's a tape about how he got suspended for 10 days from school for whatever. And it's, I was like, man, this dude's really sick. And I didn't hear nothing from him after that. And then like he started promoting Ass Rap, and Ass Rap is amazing. K.I. hates him for whatever. Oh, K.I. hates him because of his voice, but.
Yeah,
he's
which,
even like,
you know,
he'll be sitting there just singing songs, not even realizing it.
Dude, and that's so crazy, because he's out of Chicago, right? Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, he's from Chicago.
Yeah, and dude, just like the dichotomy of what's coming out of Chicago right now, like when you've got like
Thief,
Chief Keef on one end.
Nowhere near what that is.
You've
got Chief Keef and all that shit. Fat Trail.
Yeah, dude, and you know what? I really like Fat Trail, to be honest with you. And Fredo Santana
I like Chief Keef. I don't want to miss that.
Yeah, no, right? Fredo Santana and Chief Keef are definitely, I'll throw that in, you know, in the car.
Fredo
Santana's
pretty good.
Fredo Santana's fucking nuts, dude. That's,
I like their production, too. I mean, Young Chop,
like,
1200.
Yeah, for being a fucking ignorant, quote-unquote, as they, like, portray themselves. They're fucking some smart-ass motherfuckers. They got some good production, high-quality cameras, fucking, like, really doing it up, fucking. That's what's up. That's what you got to do. Yeah, dude, it's fucking
they're smart.
And we've somehow whittled down time. We have 3 minutes left in the show. So
okay.
I want to kind of bring it all back, and I want to say, man, I appreciate being a Texan, being from the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, as, man, there is the best rapper to come out of DFW, in my opinion, in the past 20 years is Big Tuck. So for there to be any kind of quality whatsoever, and for there to be as much quality, you know, as you
Big
and Beach
really
and Shag and K.I.,
yeah.
Lamar, like, all of y'all, like, it's fucking... It's dope. It is what it's. Y'all are doing it. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, man, we're trying. We just got to keep busy and keep it going. And we have a lot of stuff we're working on. I'm letting you know that, like, this later part of 2013, you're gonna be hearing a lot from me and a lot from the people I'm around, and it's ridiculous. And I still have a lot of stuff I'm working on, and I can't wait to show everybody.
Hell yeah, dude. That's what's up. And I mean, we've got to – we'll definitely get you a show out here in Denver so some of you and the boys can, you know, travel up, get that real – you know what I mean? Because there's nothing like – especially – I've never been in a band. I've never toured or done anything, but I know whenever I go and read poetry in a random city, there's nothing like that feeling in the world to be able to perform. You know what I mean? Like,
yep, for people
or
you don't know.
Out, exactly, for people you don't know.
Yeah, I love that.
And you – do you have any shows coming up?
Not me personally, as far as beat sets, I don't. But the group I'm in, Better Union Cost Ceiling Beach, we have a show coming up at the Pier Skate Park. We're still planning it, and we're in the process of that. But that's going to be really major, and we're going to be – it's kind of a release party for our beach tape called Above. And so that's really the only one I can think of right now. I'm sure Aeronautics and Clay West have some stuff coming up, but that's all I can think of.
Well, yeah, do you have okay, so your band camp is New Lou, and then you can go to your Facebook page.
NewLou.bandcamp.com.
And you can go to your Facebook page and look up all the like, that has all the links to everything, right?
Yeah, it should have everything. I don't post on there enough, but it'll go to my Facebook page. I try to keep up to date with everything as far as shows and stuff, but... if you could like my Facebook page, that'd be cool. I want to grow in that. Facebook's a good way to get music out. But
yeah, no, definitely.
I'm on Twitter as well. My Twitter is a little more active.
For sure. See, I'm trying to get into the Twitter thing. So what's your Twitter name?
My Twitter is Louis_Beach. That is my Twitter. I just
beautiful.
Post depressing
yeah.
stuff on there.
Good. That's all I do on my Twitter, too. And also for America, links to Louis' music is also on the Cheeseburger Nebula, which is my blog. So, yeah, little shameless self-promotion right there. But
No, you need it, dude. People need to read that.
Exactly. Well, dude, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, man.
Cyberspace. Dude, any fucking time. Feel free to call in whenever you want. So
I definitely will. All
right, man.
You take it easy,
brother. All right, later.
Later.
And that was Louis, a.k.a. Nah Man. Naaman. I don't know. We call him Nah Man. I'm gonna play Silent Aggression by Louis to end all the things.